And welcome to Autistically Unapologetic, the unfiltered and unmasked podcast about everything autism. Here's your host, Devin Morrissey.
Hi, and welcome to Autistically Unapologetic with me, Devin Morrissey. A lot of you listeners that continuously tune into my podcast will recognize me as a supporting cast member from the first two seasons of Netflix's five-time Emmy Award-winning docuseries, Love on the Spectrum. And over the course of the last 2 years since I started this podcast, I have had the opportunity to interview fellow cast members from the show, from Subodh Garg to Connor Tomlinson to fan favorites Abby Romeo and David Isaacman. However, there's one cast member that a lot of the world doesn't really know about. Who is Adon Correa? When will we get to know more and learn more about Adon Correa? Well, over the course of the next two episodes, you will get the chance to hear from Adon for the very first time. Adon, of course, is here to talk about his time on the first three seasons of Love on the Spectrum, but we'll also hear from him about growing up on the autism spectrum, especially with his father serving our country as a politician of the state of California, and what he has been up to since his time on the show wrapped this current season. Also, for the first time on this podcast, he will be answering questions from you, the fans. There was a lot to get into throughout the next two episodes, so please welcome to Autistically Unapologetic, Adon Correa. Adon, my man, welcome to the podcast.
Truly a blessing to be here. What an honor. What a privilege. And let me tell you, boys and girls, if you have not seen Love on the Spectrum in the first two seasons, my man Devin Morrissey, he found true love. Give him a round of applause. Be happy for him and Andrea. And let me tell you. I just want to say this. Love on the Spectrum, it's a great story. And before we get started, I want to encourage everybody out there, don't rush these things, relationships. Because let me tell you, yes, everybody knows by now. And if you haven't, spoiler alert, I'm truly sorry. I'm not one to spoil things unless it's food because it's...
You spoil food?
Because everything touches food for my hunger for power. Megatron. 1984 in the second Transformer episode of the first season. This was like, you destroy everything you touch, Megatron. He's like, because everything I touch is food for my hunger for power.
Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. Well, listen, I gotta tell you, I have been super excited to have you on way before even this recent season. We first met over a year and a half ago, and that's instantly right. We clicked just like that on the spot. And yes, I feel like there's a lot of similarities about us that we can really relate to on a variety of things. And I feel like the world doesn't really know who you are. They've really known you in the shadows of the show. But I feel like over the course of these next two episodes, the world and the fans are really going to get to know more about you. And so this is part one where we're really going to sort of kind of explore more of your beginnings and your time on the first two seasons of the show. So with that said, Adon, are you ready to hop right into it?
I absolutely am. I'm absolutely ready. And like I said earlier, let's get it started. Let's get it started in here. Cut the music. Roger, roger.
Cut the record player, man.
Ignore that, ladies and gentlemen. That was Roger, who is going to be demoted if he pulls that stunt again. You will if you want to keep your promotion.
I love it. I feel like I'm interviewing Robin Williams at this point. I love it.
Spoiler alert, I love to do voices, and I keep interrupting.
Yes, we're going to get into that, actually. But I always like to start my conversation with a podcast guest by really kind of going back to the very beginning of life. So my first question for you, Adon, is when were you first diagnosed autistic? When did you find out that you were autistic? And what was your reaction to all of it?
I'm glad you asked, because here's the truth. It was around elementary school when I was diagnosed with autism. And I didn't know how to react because I didn't know what it was. It wasn't until my middle school, it wasn't until third, fourth, fifth grade that I figured out that autism was a way of thinking. That, yes, like everybody, I was furious and aggravated that it would be harder for me to pick up on certain things compared to others. And how, at the time, before it was called being on the spectrum, People called it a disability,
Yes.
and it took time to turn that identity around, where instead of it being a disability, it's a different ability that some would consider disabling.
So you kind of found out when you were very, very, very young. That's actually pretty interesting.
Yep.
And tell me a little bit about your childhood growing up on the autism spectrum. What was that like for you?
It was, well, at first the kids thought I had too much hyper energy, but then when they found out what I was, especially in middle school, let's just say, it was a dark time. But middle school was the darkest days when I was bullied for it. Some people called, another word for autism was having Asperger's. And the funny thing is, the kids, they were trying to disrespect me, and I wasn't picking up on that, so I was actually taking it as a compliment. And ironically, in a comedic way, they were getting pissed off. It's like, do you not know what that means? It's like, oh, I know, you're complimenting me. Thank you. It's like, no, you got Asperger's. I'm like, you brought burgers? Well, where are the fries? And they were like, what? And then, I actually made some kids laugh, and fortunately, that drove away some of the bullies. And it got to the point where one way autism did benefit me, being having struggling just a little bit and picking up on that, was that I didn't pick up on the insults. It was perplexing. I did need a di require additional help. I did need a school counselor, and at first they made fun of me for it. But when I showed them that it wasn't getting to me, and when I actually embraced it instead of letting them see that it was hurting me, the bullying eventually backed off, and the support helped me become the man I am today, and I don't regret it one bit. And I encourage everybody who feels like they shouldn't take on a counselor or a special medication to help them focus, whatever. Don't listen to that. Respectfully, whoever says men don't need help or adults don't need help, pardon my French, bullshit. If you need extra services, if you need the Department of Rehabilitation, if you need the regional center, for God's sake, that toxic adult mentality, for crying out loud, don't listen to it. That's people's insecurity, other people projecting their insecurity because they want to see other people insecure. Respectfully, they don't speak for you, you speak for you. So if you need those extra services and you are on the spectrum or you feel you're autistic, go see a doctor, find out, and if you do require additional help, just ask.
Honestly, I couldn't speak more truer words than that. It's interesting how we both share the very sad common similarity of bullying as we were growing up. I myself went through the very traumatic experience of it, just feeling like I had to mask who I was. Because I found out that I was autistic because I was heading into sixth grade. And it was actually about 20 years ago at a time when autism wasn't really seen as a positive thing still. A lot of people were
Unfortunately, it
not,
wasn't not like today now, where it's actually accepted and embraced. Because we grew up in childhoods where being on the spectrum or having mental disabilities, whatever, it was shamed upon.
It was seen as a death sentence. And something that I really admire you for is really not letting it get to you, even though it was traumatizing in many, many, many ways. And there are times where I still have to fight my own personal inner demons because of
You
the
and me
trauma that I
both.
went through.
I
But
got
I
a
think,
coworker.
as you mentioned, it really kind of strengthened you into the man that who you are now, and especially, taking some of those insults as jokes, which shockingly enough actually had your bullies to back the off, and I can't say that like you can.
If I may, real quick, it's funny because when they saw that verbal insults weren't working, they actually had the balls, pardon my French, to send one of these guys to try to beat me up. And here's the funny story. Ironically, he did me a favor. When he pulled me into this one little corner of the park of the schoolyard where there was no cameras, I kicked his ass. He didn't whoop mine. And he jumped on my neck, he was hitting me, and then I slammed him into a wall and I let him have it. And like any coward, he cussed me out, but I told him this: a word to the wise, Luis. The next time you beat somebody up because they're kind, just remember, kindness is no substitute for weakness. So if you want to do this again, I warn you, be ready.
My gosh, I am so sorry to hear
Oh
that.
no, don't be, because the other day the girls actually they were fawning over me. They were like they were feeling sorry for me that like I nearly got beaten up, but I kicked his ass. But the gist is, from there on out, it was just verbal insults. No one got physical with me because they knew, okay, and Uncle Ray may be the opposite of toxic masculinity, but this guy can kick ass. I'm like, you just figured that out. It's like, why the hell didn't you do this any sooner? It's like, Because unlike you, I have self-control.
I think self-control really does go a long way. And especially, you know, for us autistic boys growing up and feeling like we were not able to express our emotions of, hey, this hurts our feelings. The fact that you took the high road so well and really kind of grew stronger from it. It's really applaudable. Now, your family is no stranger to the public eye, as your father is Congressman Lou Correa, who is currently serving as the U.S. Representative for California's 46th Congressional District. What is it like having a congressman as a father, and have you had the chance to actually go with him on his travels representing the state of California?
Number one, it's awesome, and number two, it's funny. Before he was a congressman, he was actually the U.S. state senator. He was state senator for California.
Really?
Serving in the state senate in Sacramento. Before that, he was an OC supervisor for the county. And interestingly enough, it was actually great because I actually learned, you know, having a father as a politician, it helped me be great because I would campaign for him. I would walk door to door, introduce me to public, social skills. And it actually taught me how to interact with people at his events, especially professionals. And I would get feedback and how to interact with people, what not to do. I keep eye contact to show them that I'm interested, etc. And he would also point out times where, being on the spectrum, sometimes we yak so much like Foghorn Leghorn. I say, we just don't know when to shut up. We're just so excited. And sometimes I say, we hijack the conversation like Emperor Palpatine at a political rally, turning sympathy from the Republic to the Empire. I see, my time is up. Thank you, Foghorn Leghorn. Unfortunately, folks, he is not completely wrong. And this is my podcast. Get out of here, my boy. I say, do I need to introduce you to Colonel Sanders? Colonel Sanders? No, boy, I'm going to be out of here.
Oh, my goodness. You are hilarious.
Word of advice, if you ever deal with Foghorn Leghorn, just tell him that you know Colonel Sanders and he'll run away.
I think I actually am going to go with that. That's really a good piece of advice. It's really cool, though, that you've had the chance to actually go on trips with him. And you've been to Washington, D.C. plenty of times with your father.
And Sacramento.
And Sacramento as well.
Actually, here's the deal. It's had its moments, its positives and its negatives, where sometimes people hate my dad. That's natural. And there will be one or two instances where sometimes they'll try to be jerks and try to project that onto us. But like I said, having dealt with bullies in high school and middle school. Well, actually, it was more middle school. It has its pros and cons, but if anything, I feel God made that important because he knew I was going to be on the spectrum, and if I had a father for a congressman, it would be a great opportunity to introduce me to these social gatherings, how to be professional, how to talk, and being a security guard now at the Honda Center. If you have any event, if you ever want to come to California and you hear of any cool concerts in the Orange County area,
yes.
I work Honda Center, folks. And Univision did an interview about me about that, and the Lauren Daigle commercial. But the gist is, if you ever come to the Honda Center, I'm one of the security guards, so maybe you'll see me.
One of the security guards you might have seen on TV a couple of times. Just a heads up.
But yeah, being a security guard too, oh my God, let me tell you, it's one of the most stressful jobs. It's just as stressful as being in DC politics because you're dealing with entitled people. You're dealing with all sorts of people. And sometimes at concerts, you deal with drunks.
Let me
tell you, when it comes to drunks and intoxicated, they're worse than preschoolers. At least preschoolers have an excuse. They don't know any better. I once had to help. One time, my friend Chris had to help carry this drunken lady outside. It took four security guards to carry her out.
Oh, my gosh.
One by each arm, one by the neck, and then the other two by the ankles.
She was, my goodness.
Intoxicated, and I'm just like, say, por Dios, I'm glad you're not my mother. I'm just like,
oh, my goodness. That's absolutely crazy. What I think is actually really, 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 really cool about your father is that he is extremely vocal in the world of us autistic folks, and he has been advocating hard, super, super, super hardcore. And that's something that I really, really, really genuinely appreciate, especially with a lot of things that, like as you mentioned, we're in very divisive times right now. And
unfortunately,
a lot of people don't realize that a lot of disability rights are not necessarily being taken into consideration, especially with the ADA Act that was signed in 1990 by a Republican. People need to remember that our lives are just as important as any other lives. You know, regardless of your political party, regardless of where you come from, people need to remember that.
And you know what the saddest thing is? A lot of people don't know this, but Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Let me tell you this right now, folks. Whoever said it's too late to stand up for your rights, don't. You
it's
know what?
never late.
He wants to put together a registry for people on the spectrum, a national
yeah.
registry. And let me tell you, folks, you need your voices heard. Everything he's lied about us, saying we never contribute, we don't pay taxes, BS. My dad's on the spectrum, and he's contributed to society and made...
Wait, your dad is autistic?
The gist is, yeah. It actually helped to have a father on the spectrum who's actually been through this. And the gist is, he's a perfect example about how Robert F. Kennedy is Jr. is wrong, because people on the spectrum, like my fellow cast members, like Danny Bowman, like Abby, like David, James, we've all been on the spectrum, even Devin. And we still made it successful on Netflix, and we encourage people to change. We pay taxes. We are not a burden to families. We're not a burden to society. And we can hold on to jobs. I mean, for crying out loud, I'm on the spectrum, and I can handle being a security guard. And there are people who I have to deal with who sometimes, unfortunately, are worse than people on the spectrum because entitlement and all that. But you know what? That's life. What are we going to do about it? The gist is, stand up. Have your voices heard. Do not let this registry be passed.
Yep.
Contact your local congressman. Get your voices heard. Because the minute you listen to these lies that it's too late because of our current administration, whatever, you give them what they want.
100%. You know what?
I don't want to make that political, but the gist is, stand up for your rights for all of us.
Absolutely. That is something that I think people forget sometimes, is that there's a lot of people that have come up with these ridiculous conspiracy theories. Like, for instance, this whole thing about vaccines causing autism. Like, where's the proof? Like, that has been debunked countless and countless and countless and countless of times. So many times it has been debunked, I have lost track. But I would actually love to pivot gears at this point and talk a little bit about something that you're very passionate about.
Ooh.
Because one thing that I've gotten to know about you as a friend from not just the TV show that we were both on together, but in real life, is that you are passionate about voice acting. What prompted your love and passion of voice acting? Was it a specific TV show or film growing up, or was it other factors that started your interest in voice acting?
Funny story you mentioned that, because originally it was singing, and then, ironically, I didn't want to play the villain, like, in one of my musicals, but binge-watching, that's what got me into being a voice actor, because I wanted to contribute to a generation of entertainers, behind the scenes, actors, voice actresses, who have contributed to making childhoods a dream come true, like ours, like Avatar The Last Airbender, etc.
Yes!
And I wanted to be a part of all this, because if a group of voice actors and actresses could encourage me to want to inspire people to be the best versions of themselves and to stand up for what's right, I want to be a part of that too. Because all it takes is one spark to ignite hope in the darkest hours.
It's interesting, just because when you look at voice acting now compared to what it once was, it's amazing of how it has evolved over time, especially with technology and especially with these new voice actors that have come in literally during our childhood. I can vividly remember when I was a kid, there was Tony Alsamo, who was the voice of Donald Duck and is still the voice of Donald Duck to this day. And then when you look at his voice acting of Donald Duck compared to Clarence Ducky Nash, who originated Donald Duck back in 1934 with The Wise Little Hen, it's pretty amazing to think of just how the legacy is carried on of these beloved characters through voice acting, even with Mel Blanc, who, by the way, pretty much does every single Looney Tune you can think of, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Foghorn Leghorn, as Don gave a great demonstration.
He
earlier.
Also does Yosemite Sam, the rootinest tootinest barn shooting in the Wild West. I'm the hootinest tootinest stop north, east, and west of the Pine Coast. I'm the Yosemite.
Wait, that's perfect. That's perfect. Although he always finds himself in trouble because he can never get a hold of Bugs. He can never.
Yeah, that's something that him and Elmer Fudd have in common. They're terrible huntsmen.
You think? Those two and Wile E. Coyote, because he can never get that doggone Roadrunner.
It's like, stranger, you just eat yourself a hole in the head. Bugs Bunny in the cantina. You've been eating onions. And you're going to be eating lead. You stranger. And he's like, I think it's fair to warn you. I swing a fast shooting iron myself. It's like, well, you know what? I have to find the clip, but the gist is, that's one of my favorite gags I like to do. I make coworkers laugh sometimes. Pretty good.
Oh, I know. Well, that's the beauty of voice acting, and especially with the household names that we grew up with, like Nancy Cartwright, who was still doing Bart Simpson after all these years. She voiced Chucky Finster for many years. You got Bill Farmer, who voices Goofy, which, by the way, I have a chance to sing in front of him twice, and
You lucky. I actually met him at the, dude, I
he
actually met him at the NostalgiaCon in Anaheim this past June.
Oh, you're right. And we're actually going to get to that in the next episode because I'm dying to hear how that went.
Ooh.
Then there's also great people like Carolyn Lawrence and Tom Kenny, who a lot of people don't know this, have been the voice of SpongeBob and Sandy Cheek for all of these years. And that's the type of nostalgia that it's still amazing to grow up with. You got June Foray, who is very, very, very critically acclaimed.
She laid the groundwork for feminine voice actresses like Mel Blanc.
Yes, she
Oh my
did.
God. One of my favorite roles she did was Rocket J. Squirrel.
Oh my God, wait, yes, you're right.
She also voiced Natasha in that same show. She voiced, oh my God. The list goes on. She's actually known for playing Granny in the Looney Tunes. Well, until her passing in 2017.
Oh yeah.
Heaven rest her soul. She lived to be over 100, folks, and she still did voice
Wow.
acting at an elderly age. So let
That's
me tell you, if
amazing.
you think you're too old to voice act, June Foray did it when she was 100, and she was still doing it before she passed away.
And that's the type of career that is so exciting to try to pursue. Rob Paulsen, Tress McNeil, who voice some of
Oh
the
yeah.
Warner siblings from the Animaniacs.
Oh yeah,
Crazy as heck, but
don't
I
forget
love
Maurice LaMarche. He
them.
voiced, "Eh, the same
Oh, wait,
thing
you're
you do every
right.
night, Pinky. Try to take over the world."
Narf.
Hey, Jay Brian, what are we gonna do tonight? The same thing we do every night, Pinky. And you know what the fun fact is, which is pretty cool?
What is it?
His voice for Brain, he actually took inspiration from Orson Welles and how Orson Welles talks.
Oh my goodness.
Like Orson Welles' radio show, War of the Worlds, that actually, this was the time before television was even out.
It's so exciting just to see how you light up when talking about voice acting and how it excites you. Just being able to hear the different voices that you do so far throughout this podcast, it's absolutely amazing. Now, I would actually love to talk about a show where our friendship was actually started. Now, Love on the Spectrum is a reality TV show surrounding the lives of autistic individuals as they encounter love, dating, relationships, you name it. Now, after two successful seasons in Australia and a massive audience reaction around the world, Netflix and Northern Pictures decided to bring Love on the Spectrum to the United States. How were you approached to be on Love on the Spectrum for all three seasons so far?
Now, people think that it's adorable. People actually assumed that I auditioned for Netflix. How? But respectfully, it's the funny story, and this is one of the ways God works. I didn't go to Netflix. Netflix approached me. It was a
Yes.
guy who knew a guy who knew a guy who then arranged a Zoom meeting, and then from there, it was the speed dating event in Hollywood in the first season.
Yep.
And moments like that, it's rare for opportunity to come to you, but when it does,
Yes.
take advantage of it because it was a blessing.
That is something that a lot of fans are really, really shocked to hear, was that very first season, there were no auditions. What the
They didn't.
producers did was that they scouted for talent in different parts of the country. And when I was approached to be on the show as a friend, I said, okay, because we were just coming out of COVID. Production had been stalled for a very long time just because it wasn't safe to shoot during COVID. And what I vividly remember was I said yes to go on the show with my friend. And then I get a call from Netflix wanting to know my availability, when I would be able to shoot. So literally, it got started literally very quickly. And I was just coming out of my master's program from USC. I had just earned my master's degree there. I was already working in the elementary school system for the school district. I was not expecting all of this to happen so fast. And the thing too, this was literally the first season. Given how well beloved the original Australian version was, we had no idea of just how big this show was gonna eventually become. So all of us were going into this, myself, you, all the cast members from LA, San Francisco, Boston, and Kaylin in South Carolina, we had no idea what was gonna happen and have this become the massive cult phenomenon that it literally is now. Now, the world first got to meet you when you met with Danny at a speed dating event that you mentioned on the very first season of the show, and you were able to impress her with your voice acting chops. What was that like, being able to show your voice acting on camera? And was there anything you wish aired from the first season?
Let me tell you, that was the first time I ever voice acted in public. Even if it wasn't
really,
I told my coach here and there that my Scott Glab, which by the way, one of my favorite mentors of all time. Well, actually, he was one of my best mentors. There are others out there, so don't take it personally, everybody else. I assure you, I'm still giving you credit as well. My wrestling coach supported me all 4 years, helped me become the man I am today through wrestling, and we did connect at first. Danny did voice acting for her school for her animated project for her students.
She did.
And I would do it for my comics, for my original characters. And the voice I gave her for, well, not gave her, because it's my voice. It's my voice. This is the voice I introduced Danny to when we were at the dinner speeding event. Scales. The brute.
Yes. I remember hearing that from the show. Yes.
So, sad story. Scales. He's a veteran from the veteran. I mean, take it away, big fella. Don't let him crack my bones. Sorters in the gem years. My world was still filled with diamonds. And then they extracted me from the mutant from the coin with diamonds DNA. I received titanium scales. And now I use my birth strength to level continents. Okay, big guy, get out of here. Anyway, that's my character's backstory. Tragic villain, but gotta love to hate him.
I had absolutely no idea that was your first time ever doing voice acting in public. That must have been literally going out of your comfort zone, because that's what dating can do sometimes. You go out of your comfort zone and really show the best of you to someone. Mm-hmm. I gotta be honest, I wish that I was there to see that in person, because a lot of people do not know this. Netflix wanted me to shoot with Danny before the speed dating event. However, however, I was actually out of town because I had just gone back the day before from a guy's trip to Nashville. And I had just landed. I was going to a music festival in Napa the day that they wanted me to shoot. So we did a little Zoom for the speed dating event in which you guys met, but we had to do it over Zoom. Now, Netflix was very specific that they didn't really want to do any Zoom meetings, you know, just because we were coming out of COVID. So that scene never aired. Now, in season two, the world got to catch up with you two as you both met up at Pasadena Comic Con. I know that you both were interested in rekindling your relationship and seeing where things go from there. Yeah. How did you feel at the time about re-exploring that spark?
I was willing to give it a shot. Respectfully, I didn't know if we were actually going to become a couple before we actually did. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, I was interested in just getting to know Danny because we were connecting at the time. Voice acting, before I made the career change from animation to graphics design to just digital art altogether, given, you know, fun fact, unfortunately, 70% of animators have been laid off in favor of AI.
Yeah.
That was a huge reason I changed from animation to graphics design right now.
Yeah.
I just want to learn the digital art mediums, effects, frame by frame, etc., motion, because I want to do graphics design and some animation. What kind? Maybe I don't want to do animation. Maybe it's more 3D modeling. I'm still experimenting, but digital art, absolutely. But let me tell you, seeing Danny and how she's been in the industry, but then also finding out that we connected, I was willing to give it a spark. Plus, this was my first convention. I'd never been to one of these before.
Really? And
boy, did I regret it. You say, boy? I say, I told you. Ah, shut up. Get out of here, Leghorn. You didn't have to be so rude, boy. You were as rude as Sylvester and Tweety. You see what I have to put up with?
I do.
My only regret was that I wasn't a part of these conventions until now. Seeing the artists, because I'm working on building my own art business. Can't reveal too much. I wouldn't want I wouldn't want my competition getting wind. But the gist is, I'm working on it. And best of all, I've almost finished designing business cards. But you know what? I'm diving on top of it. The gist is, self-made artists, they've been giving lectures like this at my university and what to do if you want to go to a convention, how you check your rates to make sure you have a company. But more than anything,
You have a brand, you have a logo, you have a banner, you have merchandise, you have a service,
yes.
you have a need to provide, and that you have starting rates.
You gotta have the starting rates. It's 100% important.
And you gotta make sure you don't let people undervalue you.
Being undervalued is something very important to avoid. I remember this just because if people remember from season one, it said that Danny and Adon were looking to go to a comic convention. I remember one of the scenes that we shot for season two was, you know, talking about meeting up with you again and going to Pasadena Comic Con. And I'm not going, I was actually really excited about it because I felt like this would be a good chance to rekindle something or see if there is in fact a spark, because some people don't often realize. Sometimes people, they go on dates, then they just decide that right now they need to focus on other life stuff. But it doesn't mean that you can't go back and explore it later on. And so I'm not gonna lie, I was actually really excited to see where things would eventually go, not just in that scene, but also another scene that I shot that didn't make the final cut. So with that being said, you and Danny ended up actually becoming a couple at the end of the second season, and it actually became your first real relationship. How did you feel in that moment when you two did become a couple, and what was it like watching your romance develop throughout that second season in front of the world?
It was speechless because, like I said, I've never had a relationship before. And even though it was never aired, right after we kissed and became boyfriend, girlfriend, I called my mom, and Danny met my mom voice to voice, just like she did with my dad. And then eventually she did get to meet my parents in person. So it was awesome. Like I said, I'm speechless because I didn't know what to say. I've never had a girlfriend before. I've never been in a love relationship, so... outside my parents, of course, but still.
Just don't be dating your parents, though. They already have a commitment to
disgusting.
Each other.
No. You would say that, you sick, you dirty swine.
Nah. Sorry.
The soon will be over. Shannon, back to the story. All right.
I just remember the conversations that I had with Danny literally after you guys had kissed. And we had talked on the phone and just how I remember her being so excited about this relationship becoming official, just because to find love is one thing, but to do it in front of TV is a completely different thing. And there's a lot of added pressure that comes
because
the expectations from just even being on the show, even though I wasn't on there to find love, I was there to help Danny find love. There's an added pressure when it comes to trying to find love on a big platform as a dating show. Like, we see it all the time on The Bachelor, Love is Blind, Love Island, a lot of those other dating shows where, you know, the pressure is high. But for an autistic dating show, the pressure is even higher because the fact that it's never been done before. We see these types of shows plenty of times, but in an autistic world, it's never really been done. So I thought when I watched the second season, I was so happy to see sort of how it blossomed and it developed. It really made my heart genuinely happy. And especially just to see you being so well appreciated by the fans. That to me meant everything.
It was a blessing. It was.
Yeah. And sometimes it's the positive things that really do make a difference. Now, since we are getting to know Adon more, there is so much more to hear from him in regards to so many aspects of his life, including love on the spectrum. And because of that, I felt that it was best to end this episode here and continue the conversation on the next episode of this podcast. But in the meantime, if you like what you heard on this episode and want to hear other episodes or stay tuned for future episodes, such as the next episode with Adon, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe to this podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and on YouTube. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I'm Devin Morrissey, and I'll see you next time right here on Autistically Unapologetic.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Autistically Unapologetic with Devin Morrissey. If you like what you hear and you want to see more, don't forget to rate and subscribe to stay tuned for future episodes. Again, thanks for listening.